I'm Mary Claire Murphy, and today Brad Cresswell and I cross paths with an icon of organists, Paul Jacobs. This conversation preempts Paul's upcoming performance with the Toledo Symphony Orchestra on April 13th at 8 p.m. at the Toledo Museum of Art Peristyle. We want to get the word out, and what better way to do that than to hear from the featured soloist himself. Welcome, Paul, and thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you, Mary Claire and Brad.
You know, Paul, I was looking through your website, and you're not just any organist. I mean, you've done so much, and I encourage people to read your bio and all of that before they see you. But I want to hear about some of the highlights of your career thus far. I mean, I saw that you played when you were at the age of 23, you played Bach's Complete Organ Works. I mean, that's quite a hard pill to swallow. That's a lot of stuff.
Well, thank you. Yes, Bach for me is sort of the heart of being an organist. I absolutely adore his music and loved it really from my earliest years, and spent a lot of time practicing and just getting to know his work, and decided that when I was an undergraduate that I was going to play as a marathon all of his organ works at once in an 18-hour concert. And I started at 6 in the morning, and I went practically nonstop until, I think, 12:18 a.m. the next day. I had some very brief breaks. And ever since, you know, I love playing Bach's music, which I will do, of course, at the concert at the Peristyle.
Yeah, you're playing the great Fantasia and Fugue in G minor. What can you tell us about that piece?
Yes, well, actually, I might end up switching that piece to another great prelude and fugue of Bach and play the D major, which is about the same length, and it's a very muscular, virtuosic piece, really shows off the organ and the organist very well, and just shows Bach's amazing ability to play as well with his feet as he could with his fingers.
Wow.
And I think that's what's so astonishing about these works for organ, is the feet just move nonstop.
You heard it here, folks. You might change that. Talk about the difference in what people think of an organ in an organist and what you're trying to achieve by bringing the organ into the 21st century.
Sure. Well, of course, the organ has an astonishing history and tradition that goes back many centuries. I mean, it's the oldest keyboard instrument. It has inspired the human imagination to write just so many wonderful dynamic pieces of music in many different styles, and continues to inspire composers. And of course, we're going to hear this very current work by Stephen Paulus, though he died sadly 10 years ago. The piece just sounds every bit as fresh and new today as it did when it was composed. And what I'm trying to do is just to get people to love this instrument and the music written for it. In a nutshell, that's the story of my life, because I love it so much, and I want others to have the same joyful experience.
I was interested to see that concerto by Stephen Paulus on the program, and I didn't realize, actually, that he had such a large body of organ works. I guess I thought of him as a more of a choral composer, but what is it about that concerto that you found really alluring?
Absolutely. Well, Stephen composed four organ concertos, and I actually premiered his fourth and final concerto with the Phoenix Symphony in 2013, a year before he passed. But I got to know Stephen a bit, and it was very clear that he loved the instrument. His father played the organ, and he did too, and he composed his organ concerto at a church in Minnesota. He told me about this, and I'm sure he composed the one that I'm going to play with the Toledo Symphony, probably in this same church in Minnesota. He sat at the organ found its strengths, found ways to write effectively for the instrument. And, you know, I often find that Stephen's music is just bursting with beautiful melody, just a wonderful adventure, a narrative of emotions, just a development of emotions and a storyline. But his melodies are just so appealing, particularly in the second movement. But we also get the fire and virtuosity. The last movement has a very flashy toccata, and of course there's a lot of a lot of fancy footwork too that goes along with it.
I wonder, looking at the list of modern composers that you've premiered their music, can you tell a difference between a composer who's an organist like Stephen Paulus and a composer who is just writing for the organ but doesn't actually play the instrument?
That's a very good question, Brad. Yes, I think that you can tell the difference. I've played both. I've played concertos written by people who weren't organists. And I think that those who have some familiarity with the instrument tend to write a bit more idiomatically for the instrument with a greater understanding. On the other hand, as long as a composer is open-minded and willing to do a little homework on the instrument and study the music, they can write beautifully for the instrument, and that's what we want.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of my organist at church, no less, and all the complicated things that she does just to make something happen then. I would be very intimidated to write for the organ, I have to tell you.
And it can be daunting for new composers. But what I always tell them is, get to know an organist, but don't panic. Don't worry. Don't worry about all the intellectual baggage that comes along with it. All the nomenclature on the organ, all these weirdly named stops and things. Just write the notes. Just write music and have an organist look at it and help you a little bit.
Yeah, very good advice from one of the preeminent organists of our time, of all time, I should say. You're the first organist to win a Grammy Award and the only one who has done so far. What was that experience like for you when you found out?
Well, I think my jaw dropped to the floor. I couldn't believe it when it happened. I mean, being nominated was a bit of a shock to me. And to be nominated for a very kind of an intimidating, I love the work, but the big work of Messiaen, which is not exactly easy listening, but I love it because it's just so colorful and all of that. But I guess the people who evaluated it liked the recording, and then they ended up giving it a Grammy. So I just was very grateful for that opportunity, not just for me, but for the art form to be recognized alongside every other instrument, which it should.
Yeah, well, you've played that Messiaen piece, as I understand it, also in a great big concert in person, like a marathon concert. Is that right?
That's right. That was only half the length about of the Bach marathon. That was about eight and a half hours, thankfully.
Paul, when you are playing these great works and you're traveling around the country, I'd imagine there's a lot of variation in the actual instruments that you're playing. What kind of variance do you see?
Oh, yes. Well, that is one of the challenges sometimes of being an organist. We don't own our instrument, usually. I mean, there are some organs, but even if we do own it, we usually can't carry it around with us like a violinist or any other musician, and even a pianist can have a piano transported. But an organ is usually part of the architecture, as it is at the peristyle. Of course, the peristyle organ is by a very important American organ builder, the first part of the 20th century, Ernest Skinner. And he built organs that just sound so rich and beautiful and have a lot of depth and warmth to them. And a lot of power, too, when you need it. And I'm really looking forward to playing this work. Of course, as an organist, we have to just spend a lot more time at the instrument, getting to know where all the gadgets are and the buttons are, because it changes from instrument to instrument.
Mm. Yeah, can't take it on a plane with you. Let's say you go back in time, around the time that Camille Saint-Saëns was writing his organ symphony. What do you think Is the major difference between organists of, say, the 1800s and organists now of the 21st century?
Well, electricity, for one. You know, you didn't have electricity until the very end of the 1800s. And that certainly impacted organ building, because you no longer needed lots of people to pump the bellows to produce the wind for the pipe organ, but you could just have a large blower and these fans that produce the wind, and they're stored in a reservoir. But also in terms of playing, I suppose that the design of an organ changed over this century, and the virtuosity continued to expand, and different techniques were developed. But that doesn't mean that music from earlier times isn't every bit as rewarding or exciting or difficult to play. You know, it's just a different kind of virtuosity, different requirements.
Yeah. You have music on here by Johann Sebastian Bach and Stephen Paulus. We've already said that they are organists. Tell me if I'm wrong. I'm thinking Camille Saint-Saëns was also an organist. Is that true?
He certainly was.
Yes.
In fact, Saint-Saëns was a very, very fine one, a virtuoso organist, and, you know, performed public recitals on the organ, wrote a large body of solo organ music, too. So he was also the organist of one of the churches in Paris. He knew the pipe organ very well.
Let's talk about the Symphony No. 3, because I'll let you in on a little secret for radio. Sometimes we just start with the organ, you know, playing that big, huge chord at the second half. I wonder what you have to say about the Symphony No. 3, and especially the organ as it relates to that symphony.
Absolutely. Well, the organ, of course, plays the central role, even though the part is not, for an organist, the most technically difficult. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's such a central role in the sense you can't imagine that work without the organ. But the Saint-Saëns brings the organ in through the back door at the end of really the... It depends on how you think of the work in four movements or two.
Yeah.
It's usually considered two parts. But at the end of the first part, he brings it in softly. The organ just kind of purrs underneath the string.
Hmm.
And you get the more intimate sounds of the instrument. And it's only in the second part that the organ just roars with full glory.
Yeah, it may not be technically as difficult, but it's certainly impressive.
It does require an organist who really knows how to register, to choose the right colors. I mean, you can't just be a pianist and sit down without any proper training of the organ and do it. You know, you're just knowing the instrument and its strengths. That takes skill in and of itself.
To convey that great dramatic, expressive quality of the symphony, do you prefer to memorize your music, or are you playing from a score?
I definitely prefer to memorize my music, Mary Claire, and I usually do play from memory. I will probably use the score for the Paulus, but probably not for the other pieces on the program.
Yeah.
But I just love the freedom that comes from allowing the music just to pour right out of me, as opposed to looking at a page.
You talked about your history with the J.S. Bach piece and the Stephen Paulus piece. I wonder if you can talk about your history playing the organ symphony of Camille Saint-Saëns.
Oh, yes. And, of course, I've played it a lot over the years, and I recorded it, actually, with the Utah Symphony a number of years ago, and it's a work that I just never grow tired of playing or listening to. It's such a masterpiece, and to sit in the texture of that, the writing, and be able to listen and just relish in the sonorities, it's just an incredible experience. I don't know how else to describe it. I am just in sheer delight, in ecstasy, when I play that piece.
And well, people who are fans of the movie Babe will remember that it was played during the soundtrack over and over again, that theme from the Third Symphony. Yeah.
Absolutely, yes. This is it's definitely a happening. I mean, Sassaw's just calls on all the forces to join, and the audience never forgets it.
Yeah, it's a great ending for the program that you and the Tullio Symphony have put together. Was there anything that spurred you on to become an organist? I mean, what was the turning point for you?
Well, I knew probably when I started playing the organ that was the instrument I was called to study. I love the piano. I always will. But the organ, it's hard to say exactly what. Just its poetry, its majesty, its kaleidoscopic array of color, all of these things, it's just appeal to me. It's mysticism.
You talked about this earlier, but it's sort of a mystery box for those of us who are not the cognoscenti, right? And we don't know what's going on with that organ. But the sound that comes out of it is, I think, what's important, and certainly to the...
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And, you know, being able to watch an organist is important because a lot of people don't realize what goes into organ playing. I've met people that, musicians even, that don't realize how active the feet can be in playing the instrument. I mean, there's not another instrument that requires so much footwork. Even the harp maybe comes closest, but it's not a keyboard like the organ has.
Yeah. Do you do like special exercises to loosen up your feet, especially before a show?
Well, definitely there are technical exercises, practicing pedal scales, arpeggios. We can do all of that.
You probably have to have special shoes too, right?
That's right, Mary Claire, yes. We have shoes that are similar to dance shoes. They're lightweight, leather soles. You don't want rubber because then you can't glide. And then they have an extended heel because we play with our toes and our heels.
Wow. That's amazing. Is there anything that we've missed that you have to do to play the organ?
No, I don't think so. You have to be a bit of an octopus. You know, have to have, it seems like sometimes more than four appendages. But it's a very physical instrument. Good for the heart, probably.
Paul Jacobs, one of the great organists of our time, who is making a return appearance to the Toledo Symphony for music of Johann Sebastian Bach, as well as Stephen Paulus and Camille Saint-Saëns. That concert is happening April 13th. It's Saturday evening at the Toledo Museum of Art Peristyle at 8 o'clock p.m. You can get your tickets by calling up the box office at 419-246-8000 or go on to their website at toledosymphony.com. And Toledo Symphony is a sponsor of programs on WGTE FM 91. Paul Jacobs, it's such a pleasure to talk with you, and I've got my ticket. I'm ready to see you. We look forward to you coming to Toledo.
Oh, it's a pleasure, and thank you both for asking such good questions, and I really enjoyed talking with you.